Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast. The RTC features only the best OTR on our live stream, where we also invite you to tune in and enjoy the Radio Book Channel and the RTC Music Channel, all found at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
We're back with another RTC weekly download for you and the great old-time radio programs that I'm hoping you're going to enjoy. Today, we're going to have a biography in sound, and it's Showbiz, hosted by Georgie Jessel. This is from 1955.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Showbiz, a transcribed review of 50 glorious years of show business. Your host for the next 55 minutes will be the entertainer's entertainer, Georgie Jessel. Here now, Showbiz.
This is George Jessel. Surely you know that Abel Green and Joe Laurie Jr. wrote a book called Showbiz, and they covered it all from vaudeville to video. Many lives are in that book, my own included. And as you listen to this album distilled from the book, see how much of your life is caught by showbiz as a performer, a writer, a manager, or as a member of the audience.
Jimmy, that well-dressed man. I'm a better man than Dapper Dan. Now here's a suit I bought for $33.50. Feel this piece of gabardine, boy, ain't it nifty? Yes, I'm Jimmy, that well-dressed man. Now deny that if you can. Deny that if you can.
That was the song Jimmy Durante sang as a singing waiter on the Bowery in Coney Island.
How do you do, sir?
Is this the office of Dr. Cronkite?
Yes.
Are you a doctor?
I'm a doctor.
I'm Dubious.
I'm glad to know you, Mr. Dubious. Mr. Dubious, mind waiting? I got another patient in the other room. I'll be right back.
All right.
Oh, doctor! Oh, you butcher!
That's all I want to know.
Here, where are you going?
I'm going home. I forgot something.
What'd you forget?
I forgot to stay home.
Aha, running out on the doctor, hey?
Better than being carried out.
And those were Smith and Dale, masquerading once again as Dr. Cronkite and his patient.
My father thanks you. My mother thanks you. My sister thanks you. And as for myself, that goes without saying.
That was the actual voice of George M. Cohan giving his famous curtain speech. All this goes back to the first 10 years of the 20th century, when vaudeville was king, and over 25,000 performers were working in 4,000 theaters. Managers lured audiences into their houses with slogans like, "Absolutely free, one baby." What did it matter if it turned out to be one baby pig? And Willie Hammerstein packed them in with freak acts like phony pashas, acquitted murderesses, and the world's worst singers, the Cherry Sisters. A top star of the day was Blossom Seeley, immortalized almost half a century later by a Paramount Picture biography who had everybody singing Toddling the Toadalo.
Rippling round my ear, each note and honey dear. Oh, listen to the piccolo and oh, just listen to the fiddle. As round and round, round and round, they go toddling, waddling, toddling. Two-step, that lovely new step. Oh, honey, that two-step. Run and tell the man, tell the leader man, not to dare, don't dare, stop that plan.
When vaudeville was king, movies were called chasers, a chaser being something that chased the audience out so that the theater could refill with new customers. Thus, the movies became the last act of the vaudeville bill, a bill that might have included Lillian Russell or Weber and Fields, or Al Jolson, or this great star.
Roaming in the gloaming on the bonny banks of Clyde. Roaming in the gloaming with my lassie by my side. When the sun has gone.
In 1911, an audience waited until after midnight for a ship delayed in the Atlantic to arrive from Glasgow. And when the great Scott finally embarked and arrived at the theater, he held them in their seats until 3 a.m. with his own special brand of songs and humor. His name, Harry Lauder.
With my lassie by my side, when the sun has gone to rest, at the time that we love best. Oh, it's lovely roaming in the gloaming.
Show business is a business of names. Anna Held, who sported a beauty mark and took milk baths in a tub lined with mink. Lily Langtry, who asked that a carpet be spread from her dressing room to the stage. And because the carpet was red, that started the custom of rolling out the red carpet. Sarah Bernhardt, who insisted on being paid $1,000 a day in gold pieces only. Franny Bryce, who was one of the first burlesque greats, when burlesque was a family theater with wives and children welcome. The first song she ever sang was Lovey Joe. But the song that made her famous came years later, My Man. And now listen to the actual voices of Nora Bayes and Jack Norwood.
Turn off your light, Mr. Moon Man. Go and hide your face behind a cloud. Can't you see that couple's wallet? Who are you, man? Do it company and freeze it. You might as well have a
They sang about the moon at a time when Gus Edwards was presenting his school days. With performers you still remember a third of a century later. Groucho Marx, Hildegard, Ray Bolger, Helen Menken, Walter Winchell, Georgie Price, Eddie Cantor, and yours truly, Georgie Jessel.
One bright and guiding light that taught me wrong from right I found in my mother's eyes. Those baby tales she told, that road all paved with gold, I found in my mother's eyes.
In mid-century, there were over 2,000 millionaires, as contrasted with 200 in 1911, when Irene and Vernon Castle started the boon in novelty dancing. Gilda Gray and Bea Palmer followed with the shimmy. Mae Murray and Clifton Webb. Did you know that he was a society dancer before he was Mr. Belvedere? Oh, yes. They did the tango. And Darrell Dina somehow blended a Broadway nightclub to the South Sea Islands when she popularized the hula by dancing it at Reisenweber's restaurant in New York. And while the nation danced, one man watched it all and discussed the topics of the day. He was Will Rogers. Florence Ziegfeld kept bringing Will Rogers back to his follies year after year, and Rogers was a hit as usual. The year was 1914. By this time, the First World War had started. In England, they were singing It's a Long, Long Way to Tipperary. In America, they first sang I Didn't Raise My Boy to Be a Soldier, but that changed to I'm Proud to Be the Mother of a Soldier Boy by 1917. Oh, How I Hate to Get Up in the Morning, Katie, and Hinky Dinky Polly Voo became pop hits. And Over There by George M. Cohan developed into an unofficial anthem, much as God Bless America did 25 years later. Lillian Russell, Douglas Fairbanks, Mary Pickford, William S. Hart, and Jack Dempsey sold war bonds. And thinking of more peaceful moments, Earl Carroll and Enrico Caruso wrote a song together called Dreams of Long Ago, and the great Caruso recorded it.
just dreams of long ago, dreams of days that we both know. Time can never help us, your many dreams until the last.
As the war was ending, John Wanamaker's, a department store in Philadelphia, transmitted phonograph record music to John Wanamaker's store in New York without the use of wires. It foretold the coming of a great new segment of showbiz, radio. When the First World War was over, a door seemed to slam shut, and another seemed to be thrown open, to which impatiently tumbled a blare of jazz that turned the 48 states into one giant playground. The Roaring Twenties had started, and was to go up into an era of wonderful nonsense. Through the open door came flappers in short skirts, raccoon coats, hip flasks, rumble seats, and the Charleston. And the mood, the rhythm, the theme was jazz, as given out by the original Dixieland Jazz Band. Ted Lewis was there, too, in his battered top hat.
Is everybody happy?
And while the trombones laughed, the star who was to be the first and the last of the Red Hot Mamas sang Some of These Days, Sophie Tucker.
Some of these days, you'll miss me, honey. Some of these days, you're gonna be so lonely. You're gonna miss my kisses. You're gonna miss me, honey, when I'm far away. That I feel so lonely for you only. Cause you know, honey, you've had your way. And when you leave me, you know it's gonna grieve me. Gonna miss your big fat mama.
There was jazz aplenty in the era of wonderful nonsense, but it was Paul Whiteman who made a lady out of jazz with a concert at Aeolian Hall. There he introduced The Rhapsody in Blue by George Gershwin, and you are now listening to the original Whiteman recording. George Gershwin himself at the piano. But this great event at Aeolian Hall had not been Gershwin's debut. Oh, no. He had already paved his way to fame with a song called Swanee, which he wrote with Irving Caesar and Al Jolson sang to glory. And here is Irving Caesar singing his great song as Jolson himself might have done it.
Swanee, how I love you, how I love you, my dear old Swanee. I give the world to be among the folks in D-I-X. I even know my mammy's waiting for me, praying for me down by the Swanee. The folks up north will see me no more when I get to the Swanee shore.
If you walked down Broadway during the 20s and looked at the lights on the marquees, you'd see No No Nanette with songs like Tea for Two by Vincent Newman.
Picture you upon my knee, just tea for two and two for tea.
Rosemarie, with songs like this one by Rudolph Rimmel.
When I'm calling you,
The Blue Room from The Girlfriend by Rodgers and Hart.
We'll have a blue room,
a new room for two rooms.
And a show that seemed as if it would run forever, The Desert Song, with Sigmund Romberg melodies, including One Alone.
One Alone.
Say, wait a minute. There was one more called Whoopi, and the star, Eddie Cantor.
Another bride, another June, another sunny honeymoon, another season, another reason for making Whoopi. A lot of shoes, a lot of rice. The groom is nervous, he answers twice. It's really killing that he's so willing to make Whoopi.
In the roaring 20s, Earl Carroll had his vanities on Broadway. George White had his scandals. And Florence Ziegfeld was glorifying the American girl to the music of Irving Berlin. Ziegfeld, his was the magic name. And here is a member of the original Ziegfeld Follies Company of 1927, exactly as he sounded in 1927. Franklin Bauer singing a song from the Ziegfeld Show of that year.
I'm living up in the clouds, chasing a rainbow of a girl. In the air up there to screen us, nothing but the stars and Mars and Venus coming between us. I'm happy up in the cloud, chasing a
while the musicals sang out, the films of the 20s were still silent, except for background music played by an organ right in the theater. Silent movies with very audible theme songs became a vogue. We watched What Price Glory with Victor McLaglen and Edmund Lowe and Dolores del Rio and listened to Charmaine. Lilac Time was accompanied by Janine. Peg of My Heart took its theme song from the title of the picture.
Peg of My Heart.
there was Ramona. And from Seventh Heaven with Janet Gaynor and Charles Farrell, there was Diane. Mary Pickford, Jackie Coogan, Charlie Chaplin, Rudolph Valentino, Gloria Swanson, and Rin Tin Tin were the stars of the silent silver screen. And then in 1928, a miraculous thing was added to movie magic. I, Georgie Jessel, had starred in a Broadway play called The Jazz Singer, and the Warner Brothers made it into a movie with Al Jolson. In it, Jolie gave the movies a voice. The Jazz Singer might be called a singy, since only songs were heard. But spoken dialogue and talkies were on the way. And it was Jolson again who broke all records in a talkie singy called The Singing Fool. Paramount followed Warner's with musicals like The Love Parade and Love Me Tonight, in which a great star was brought from Gay Paris to Hollywood, Monsieur Maurice Chevalier.
Oh, me, 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 me. You funny little good for nothing, me, me. I'm a good guy, me, me. You sunny little honey of a me, me. I'm a me, me, me. You've got me sad and dreamy. You could free me if you'd see me, me, me. You know I like to have a little son of a me, me.
About that time, MGM joined the parade of movie musicals with sound. It starred Bessie Love and Charles King in Broadway Melody. This is the voice of Charlie King.
Don't bring a frown to old Broadway. You've got a clown on Broadway. Your troubles there are out of style. For Broadway always wears a smile. A million lights, they flicker there. A million hearts beat quicker there. No skies are gray on the grapevine way. That's the Broadway melody.
If you examine the era of wonderful nonsense very carefully, you'll find all kinds of contrasts. The ukulele was a fad. Flaming Youth sang of Barney Google.
Barney Google, go, 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 Barney Google, now I sing that his eye.
And Helen Kane, the Boop Boop Badoop Girl, sang songs like
Ain't You Kinda Glad? Ain't You Kinda Gay? When you hear me say I love you, tell me, baby, ain't you?
Yes, We Have No Bananas was number one on the hit parade. There were marathon dance contests, flagpole sitters, the Black Bottoms. But for all the love for crazy people and crazy tunes, a sentimental ballad and romantic voice teamed up to make the all-time best-selling record. Gene Austin, My Blue Heaven.
When whippoorwill calls and evening is nigh, I hurry to my blue heaven. I turn to the right, a little white light will lead you to my blue heaven. A smiling face, a fireplace, a cozy room, a little nest that nestles where the roses bloom. Just Molly and me.
Yes, in this era of wonderful nonsense, the two opposites in mood and tempo could live side by side. The Roaring Twenties kept many out late, but also kept many at home, before that new thing called radio. The little magic box out of which came the voice of Wendell Hall, the red-headed music maker.
Wow, 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 wow.
Wow, 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 wow.
Give me half.
had a nickel and didn't have it long. Didn't have it long, cause the kids found out that Jimmy had a nickel. Jimmy had a nickel, Jimmy had a nickel, Jimmy had a nickel.
Born to leave.
See each little one with his stardust gun join the rockabye parade. And before you know, they'll go on tiptoe where another dream is made. So hug me tight and put out the light, cause you're marching unafraid. With a great big yawn, you'll toddle on in the rockabye parade. Good night.
And the Happiness Boys, Jones and Hare.
We two boys without a care entertain you folks out there. That's our happiness. Just to know the things we do make us feel we're pleasing you. That's our happiness.
Each one beneath the sun should know that he's done his share while he's here.
Spreading all around him a little sunshine and cheer.
If we failed, at least we tried.
Radios change from crystal sets to beautiful cabinets with built-in antennas. Everything was becoming bigger and better. Opening night tickets for Earl Carroll's Vanity sold for $100 each. The stock market was going up. And up. And up. And then... Black Tuesday, October 29, 1929. Variety described what happened in its headline, Wall Street Lays an Egg. The stock market crash changed our tune to Brother, Can You Spare a Dime?
You are listening to Showbiz, a review of 50 glorious years of show business with the great personalities who made entertainment history. Georgie Jessel will bring you part two of Showbiz right after we take a 10-second pause for station identification. Showbiz, 50 years of great stars and personalities who made entertainment history. And here is our host, Georgie Jessel, to continue our cavalcade of music, laughter, and tears. Showbiz, Part 2.
The big boom became the big bust. The unemployed sold apples, two for a nickel, on street corners. Bonus marches went to Washington, and the party was definitely over, for a time anyway. One facet of showbiz, however, as if tailor-made for the Depression, grew up and prospered. It was free and came right into your living room. Radio. In towns and cities, the nation paused each night at 7 to share the adventures of the Fresh Air Taxi Company, Amos and Andy. There was Ed Wynn, Fred Allen, the Goldbergs, George Burns and Gracie Allen, Joe Penner.
You nasty man!
Fibber McGee and Molly, Jack Pearl.
Was you there, Charlie?
There was a new star named Bob Hope. And one night, a fellow who claimed he was looking forward to his 39th birthday stepped up to the mic to play his fiddle. Jack Benny. And one comedian had the largest radio audience of all. Only the King of England abdicating his throne to become the Duke of Windsor, and Franklin Delano Roosevelt's declaration of war drew more people to the radio sets. His name, Eddie Cantor.
We want Cantor, we want Cantor.
There was Morton Downey.
Wabash moon, keep shining. I'm the one who waits for me.
And will you ever forget?
Delta, and now the time has come to lend thine ears to Au Revoir, Pleasant Dreams. Au Revoir, Pleasant Dreams. Think about it. When requesting your theme, until next Tuesday when possibly you all may tune in again, keep the old maestro always in your scheme, Yelza. Au revoir, this is Ben Burney, ladies and gentlemen, and all the lads, wishing you a bit of pleasant dream.
There was Rudy Valley, the vagabond lover.
For I'm just a vagabond lover, in search of a sweetheart, it seems. And I know that someday I'll discover her, the girl of my vagabond dreams.
Arthur Tracy, the street singer.
Not a rambling rose of the wildwood, not a with your fragrance divine.
And one young fellow who introduced a new boo-boo-boo-boo singing style that topped them all, Bing Crosby.
Just a gigolo everywhere I go. People know the part I'm playing. Paid for every dance, selling each romance. Every night some heart betrays. There will come a day, youth will pass away. Then what will they say about me? When the end comes, I know they'll say just a gigolo, as life goes on without me.
During this era, Helen Morgan brought tears on Broadway. While Bee Lilly brought laughs.
When the moon is feeling up behind the hill, I get such a funny feeling. I can't keep still. I get a yen for pension, so I'll very soon be getting over to the old oak tree, where I love my loving lover like he likes me.
And Jimmy Durante, taking the advice of Sime Silverman, founder of Variety, broke up with his two partners, Clayton and Jackson, to go west and do a single in Hollywood movies. No wonder the great Schnozzola sang,
I know darn well I can do without Broadway, but can Broadway do without me? Herald Square, Times Square, Columbus Circle, 96th. Say, where am I? I must have passed my station. When they found out that I passed my destination, everybody says, Durante, let's have a celebration. As I get off the express, some yokel pushed me into a local. The crowd seen a mistake, pulled the emergency brake and shouted, there's Jimmy, that well-dressed man. Now I know darn well I can do without Broadway, but can Broadway do without me? Yes, sir, can Broadway do without me?
Hollywood was hit by the Depression on one side, the changeover to sound on the other. But despite the upsurge of the talkies, the movie palaces still needed bank nights and automobile giveaways to lure the customers in. Variety told a story in a headline, Sticks, Nicks, Hicks, Picks. Yes, Depression America wanted movies, but only the best, and Hollywood met the challenge. Walt Disney gave us Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Marie Dressler and Wallace Beery created the roles of Min and Bill. Clark Gable and Claudette Colbert romanced in It Happened One Night. We howled at Charlie Chaplin again in City Lights and blushed as Mae West whispered, "Come up and see me sometime." David O. Selznick gave us Gone with the Wind, the biggest hit of modern times. And there were such great film musicals as Warner Brothers' Gold Diggers of Broadway.
We're in the money, we're in the money. We've got a lot of what it takes to get along.
42nd Street with Ruby Keeler.
Come and meet those dancing feet. On the avenue I'm taking you to, 42nd Street.
The Wizard of Oz with Judy Garland dreaming wistfully.
Somewhere over the rainbow, way up high, there's a land that I heard of once in a lullaby.
And there was that Dancing in the Clouds couple, Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. The top composers wrote for them. Vincent Humans gave them the carioca from Flying Down to Rio. Irving Berlin set them dancing cheek to cheek in Top Hat.
Heaven, I'm in heaven. My heart beats so that I can hardly see, but I seem to find the happiness I see when we're out together dancing cheek to cheek.
Jerome Kern offered them a perfect lover's serenade.
Lovely to look at, delightful to know, and heaven to kiss.
And Cole Porter created one of the most memorable moments as Astaire and Rogers danced and sang in The Gay Divorcee. Incidentally, here is the rarest of all recordings. A record by Cole Porter himself. He plays and he sings too. One of his greatest songs, You're the Top.
You're the top. You're an arrow collar. You're the top. You're a Coolidge dollar. You're the nimble tread of the feet of Fred Astaire. You're an O'Neill drama, you're Whistler's mama, you're Camembert. You're repose, you're Inferno's Dante. You're the nose on the great Durante. I'm just in the way, as the French would say, the trop. But if baby, I'm the bottom, you're the top.
Astaire and Rogers sent America to dancing, but soon a different beat began to emerge. A different dance step, a different kind of music. It was called swing. That was the era of the great bands. You've just heard the original recording of In the Mood by Glenn Miller. But there were others who made the music go round and round. Tommy Dorsey.
Oh, I blow through here. The music goes round and around. Oh, 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 oh. And it comes up here. Now you push the first valve down. The music goes down and around. Oh, 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 oh. And it comes up here.
Cab Calloway.
Folks, here's a story about Minnie the Moocher. She was a red-hot hoochie coocher. She was the roughest of his frail, but Minnie had a heart as big as a whale. Ho de ho, de ho,
ho de ho, de ho.
Ah de ha, de ha,
ah de ha.
And the king of swing himself, Benny Goodman, playing his own clarinet.
Oh,
1939, the World's Fair opened in New York. Mike Todd presented Gypsy Rose Lee. Billy Rose staged the Acrocade. I brought little old New York back to the fair. And that same year, a Brazilian bombshell named Carmen Miranda made her Broadway debut in the streets of Paris. This is what she sounded like.
Hi, hi, have you ever danced in the tropics? And that hazy, lazy, like, kind of crazy, like, South American way. Have you ever kissed in the moonlight? And that grand and glorious, again, notorious, South American way. The Latin scheme of love is like a dream of love. A Latin stream of love is in their veins. They'll buy a jewel for you, or fight a duel for you, or drive a mule for you across the plains. There is melody in their music, while the gauchos sing it. Come on and swing it, the South American way.
But all the news from other lands wasn't as cheerful as Carmen Miranda. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the ships at sea. There's very grave news tonight. Nazi troops have invaded Poland. The rumble of those marching feet echoed round the world. Newscasters Ed Maurer and Edwin C. Hill, H.B. Kaltenborn and Elmer Davis, Raymond Gramstring and Walter Winchell, Eric Severoyd and William L. Shira were heard with new attention. But as the march of the invaders grew louder and louder, here at home, a chorus of patriotism began to swell. Irving Berlin set it to words and music. Kate Smith sang it. And in our hearts, we all joined in. The bugles blew, and America shook with a frenzy that was a combination of wartime prosperity and the fear that tomorrow would never come. The people didn't say it, but they thought, enjoy yourself. It's later than you think.
Enjoy yourself. It's later than you think.
But soldiers fought, and soldiers in grease paint entertained them. Dinah Shore brought a breath of home into the front lines overseas and to hospitals where the wounded lay. Francis Langford, Bob Hope, Al Jolson, Catherine Cornell, Arlene Francis, Gracie Fields, Kay Kaiser, Joan Davis, Bing Crosby, Joey Brown, Cantor, Jessel Durante, all made tour after tour. And Jane Frohn and Gypsy Markov lived to come back from a plane crash off Lisbon. Paradoxically, the foe's favorite war song became ours as well. Especially as interpreted by the incomparable Hildegard.
Would you like to hear the story of a girl that many soldiers know? It's a tale of love and all its glory. They tell when the lights are soft and low. Underneath the lamppost by the barricade, standing all alone, every night you see her wait. She waits for a boy who marched away, and though he's gone, she hears him say, oh, promise you'll be true, fare thee well, Lily Marley, till I return to you, fare thee well, Lily Marley. Uns unsere beiden Schatten sahen wie eine aus. Dass wir so lieb uns hatten, sah man gleich daraus. Und alle Leute sollen es sehen, wenn wir bei der Laterne stehen. Wie einst Lele Marlene, wie einst Lele Marlene. They well, Lily Marley.
In New York and Hollywood, G.I.'s dance with Betty Davis, Marlena Dietrich, Dinah Shaw, and all the other glamour girls at the stage door canteens. Morse Hart produced Winged Victory for the Air Forces. And there was another show called This Is the Army. That show raised $10 million for Army Emergency Relief. Bastogne, Hiroshima, and finally it was over. And as we reconverted to peace, strange gadgets began to appear on American rooftops. Milton Berle became everyone's Uncle Milty. Hopalong Cassidy wrote again. Television brought everything, Dagmar, wrestling and panel shows into the living room. But the reigning kings of showbiz, both as impresarios and creative writers, unquestionably were Richard Rodgers and Oscar Hammerstein II.
Where the wind comes sweeping down the plain, and the waving wheat can sure smell sweet when the wind comes right behind the rain.
We started with Oklahoma. Wrote and produced such tidbits as Carousel, Allegro, John Loves Mary, The King and I, Me and Juliet. And then in South Pacific, a basso from the Met became a wow with the Bobby Soxers, Ezio Pinza.
Some enchanted evening, when you find your true love, when you feel her call you across a crowded room, then fly to her side and make her your own. Or all through your life you may dream all alone. Once you have found her, never let her go. Once you have found her, ever let her go.
Yes, that was Ezio Pinza himself. During this period, as people were flocking to Broadway to enjoy those great productions, a voice on phonograph records was commanding a greater audience. The man to whom the voice belonged had started as a recording artist in the early 40s, and he was to enter the 50s as the undisputed champion. His name, Perry Como. You know his later records. Now listen to the first record that he ever made.
Goodbye, Sue. All the best of luck to you. You've been my only gal. What's more, my best pal. Please don't cry. Smile until the clouds roll by. Don't kiss me, dear, just walk away, or I could never, ever say goodbye, goodbye soon.
People stayed at home to listen to Como on an old invention called the Victrola, and to see him on a new invention called TV. But with all the staying at home, Broadway was booming. Even two-a-day vaudeville revived as the Palace presented Judy Garland, whose performance touched us all. Then Betty Hutton, and then Danny Kaye.
Dina, is there anyone finer in the state of Carolina? If there is and you know her, show her to me, oh, Dina. With her Dixie eyes blazing, how I love to sit and gaze in to the ease of Dina Lee. I know that every night, why do I shake with fright? Because my Dina might change her mind about me. Oh boy, it's a happy showbiz album, Dina. If she wanted to, Gina, I would hop an ocean leaner.
The cradle of showbiz, vaudeville, came back for an encore.
Encore!
Throughout the years, showbiz has proved one thing. There is nothing as permanent as change. Ah, we've seen the change from ragtime to jazz to swing, radio to television, silent movies to talkies to Technicolor to three-dimensional films. But the more things change, the more the pattern remains the same. Yesterday's John McCormick gives way to Johnny Ray. Lillian Russell to Rita Hayworth. Caruso to Lanza. Chaplin to Sid Caesar. Laurel and Hardy to Martin and Lewis. The stars change, the shows change, the songs change, but showbiz goes on, giving one encore after another. And when Eddie Fisher sings, as he does right now, he is an encore. An encore of great performers of the past, who have moved on, and who have left their place for him to fill.
They're not making the skies as blue this year. Wish you were here. As blue as they used to when you were near. Wish you were here. And the mornings don't seem as new, brand new as they did with you. Wish you were here. Wish you were here. Wish you were here. Someone's painting the leaves all wrong this year. Wish you were here. Why did the birds change their song this year? Wish you were here. They're not shining the stars as bright. They've stolen the joy from the night. Wish you were here. Wish you were here. Wish you were here.
The National Broadcasting Company has just brought you Showbiz, a recorded history of the past half century of American entertainment. Your host was Georgie Jessel. The orchestra was conducted by Norman Layton. Jack Benny, Judy Garland, Danny Kaye, Ted Lewis, Carmen Miranda, Jack Pearl, Joe Penner, and Blossom Seeley were impersonated.
There's Western Adventure tonight with Dr. Six Gun over most NBC radio stations.
Now we're all caught up on show business from the beginning to about 1955 with Georgie Jessel over NBC, and that's the way it was. We're going to change the pace a bit for the remainder of our program. This date is from the 50s. It's no more particular than that, but it's an episode of Europe Confidential and the Sniper Affair.
Presenting the world's greatest mysteries. And now, your host.
This is Basil Rathbone. Once again, I bring you mystery. What's your pleasure for today? Gaslight or neon? Well, let's take our mystery in the modern manner. A tale as up to date as today's newspaper. Our storyteller works for the Paris edition of a famous American newspaper, and his job is to investigate the stories behind the headlines. Sometimes from small beginnings, a paragraph tucked away on page 6, shall we say, Mike finds the lead to big and exciting news. Take today's story, for instance. If Mike hadn't... I mustn't tell you the story for him. Let him relate it, just as it happened to him. And now, to you. In a moment, the story begins.
Presenting Europe Confidential.
Good evening, mein Herr. So you have come to catch the sniper, huh?
Look, I guess we made a mistake.
Herr Geiler, I hope you'll pardon the question, but I just want to set my mind at rest. Did you come in just a few moments ago?
Nein, I have been lying in the warm bath for the past 20 minutes. Nor did I drop a rifle on the doorstep. I've been called many things in my time, but never a sniper. Perhaps it can be considered a distinction.
In a moment, we'll bring you Lionel Merton as Mike Conoy, the Paris correspondent of a famous American newspaper, in another exciting story in our series, Europe Confidential.
I will see you tomorrow night, then.
At the same place?
Yeah. Now I must go.
Good night, Lily. Every moment away from you will be an eternity.
Sometimes you are very silly. Tomorrow at 7, Hans.
Good night, my angel. Lily! Lily!
Oh, the sniper! She's
name is Mike Conoy. I write a column called Europe Confidential for a New York paper in Paris. One day last month, I flew from Paris to Berlin to get a story for my column. Story about a killer. The newspapers all called him the sniper. He'd committed 3 murders in the space of 4 months. And the victim in each case was a young, beautiful girl. The Berlin police were almost frantic in their efforts to catch him, but so far, no luck. When the plane touched down at the airport, Ed Mills, our Berlin correspondent, was there to meet me.
Mike, you old so-and-so.
Hi, Ed.
Well, what's the big idea, moving in on my territory? Why doesn't Paris get a sniper of her own?
Well, I'll tell you, we advertised, but, well, nobody's willing to take the job. How are things anyway?
Oh, fine, just fine. Got myself a honey of an apartment in the classiest part of the city, and every Fraulein in Berlin's just crazy about me. What more could a guy want?
Well, right now, I'll settle for a cab. I'm supposed to wire in a story of Paris by 3 p.m.
My car's right outside the gates. If you made an hotel booking, cancel it. You're staying at my place.
Well, if it won't put you out, Ed.
Oh,
you
know. I got plenty of room. Come on, grab your bag out of the pile, and we'll get going. Now, the thing I want to know is, how does a countess come to be hunting a murder story?
The human interest.
In a story like this?
Well, a killer's human. People are interested.
Well, yeah, when you put it like that.
Well, I'm not after the main story. I'll leave that to you, Ed. I just want the odd angles. Cute stuff, you know.
Sure. We'll be able to work together then. Although, if you plan to stay in the city until the sniper's caught, you better prepare to be away from Paris for a long time.
It's like that, huh?
You can't blame the cops. Where do they start? Every time a murder's been committed, it's been in a different part of the city. The only thing each crime has in common is the victim.
Pretty girls.
Every time. Guy uses a .22 rifle, probably fitted with telescopic sights. He takes up his position on the roof of a building and waits. Pretty girl comes into view, and he fires. Crowd panics. By the time the police arrive on the scene, he's gone.
A rifle's a pretty large article to conceal.
Maybe he dismantles it and hides it under his coat. It wouldn't be difficult.
Yeah. There's nothing much the cops can do except wait. Hope that the next time they catch him before he gets away.
That's about it.
Well, he's obviously crazy, but why's he got this desire to kill? Why are his victims always the same?
I can't answer that one. For this evening, I'm interviewing somebody who possibly can. Herr Dr. Atzwarn. He's one of the city's fashionable psychiatrists. Get your story phone through as soon as we get to the flat, and then you can come along with me if you like.
Fine. I've always agreed with the guy who said anyone who goes to a psychiatrist ought to have his head read, but nevertheless, it should prove interesting.
Yes, gentlemen. The killer is psychotic, I can assure you of that. And I can also guarantee that he will continue to commit these crimes until caught.
What do you think the reason is, Doc?
Who knows? The illness could have been triggered by any number of things.
Mm-hmm.
The real cause probably lies buried deep in the killer's childhood. Perhaps for some reason he once wished his mother were dead. He felt guilty about his thoughts, repressed them, and they lay smoldering deep in his subconscious for many years until, at last, they are released to the conscious.
So?
Suddenly he's aware of a desire to kill. An overpowering urge to destroy beautiful women.
So he buys a rifle and sets out to do just that.
Exactly. Or perhaps he imagines himself to be repulsive to women. He feels that no woman wants him. He feels rejected, resentful. And so he takes his revenge in this way. But, gentlemen, until he is caught and examined, we can only surmise.
What sort of a guy do you think he'd be?
Well, superficially, he is probably as rational as I. He could probably hold a normal conversation with you, joke with you. And a few moments later, he could go out again and kill.
He could, in other words, be almost any adult male in Berlin.
Exactly.
Yeah, I wonder the police are having trouble trying to trace him, then.
Yeah, Herr Conoy. Compared to this, looking for a needle in a haystack would be the play of a child.
On the way back to the apartment, Ed had to call into his office. Just as we got in the door, the phone rang.
Ed Mills speaking. Oh, yeah, Otto.
What?
When? Holy smoke, where was it? Yeah, I've got it, Otto. I'll get down there right away, and thanks for the tip. Come on, Mike.
Victim number 4?
Yeah, he's killed again. I'm not 200 yards from this office. didn't take us more than 3 minutes to run down the stairs and along the street to the scene of the crime. The victim was about 20, a brunette, and very pretty. She'd been shopping, and her basket lay beside her with a parcel spilling out over the sidewalk. A big red stain was covering her white blouse. One glance told me she was dead.
Pardon me. Did you see it happen? I'm a reporter.
Oh, she was walking just ahead of me. I thought she'd fallen over. I went to help her up, and oh, the blood.
You didn't see who fired the shot?
Nein, the blood, it was everywhere.
Did you hear a shot then?
Nein, nothing. She was walking in front of me, and she just fell. I thought she was sick.
You don't know the girl?
She's a complete stranger to me. The blood, it was horrible. She just fell over as though she was sick.
Come on, Ed, I've seen enough. I never did have a very strong stomach for this sort of thing.
Me neither.
Out of the way there, please. Let the ambulance men through. And nobody leave until you're given permission.
And of the cops. Once again, too late.
Sergeant, have your men set up a block at the intersection. And jump to it. Let nobody through unless I tell you to. Now, who saw this happen?
Even with our press cards, it took us 15 minutes to get out of the area. The police fenced in 4 city blocks and went over every building. They questioned and searched every man they found. I think they were even suspicious of one another. Result? Nothing. Once again, the sniper had got away. Ed and I phoned our stories through to Paris and then went back to the apartment.
Whiskey bottle, glasses. Grab that pitcher of ice water, Mike.
Yeah, with pleasure.
We'll take them out on the balcony. Pleasant there this time of the evening. Yeah, go on, take a seat. I don't know about you, but I need a stiff one. Yeah, I have nightmares for a month.
Better make it 2 stiff ones.
Sudden death's bad enough, no matter who it happens to. But when it's a girl, a nice-looking kid, just a kid, in fact. Well, cheers.
Yep.
This is one time I could get tight and say I had an excuse.
You know, I've got a theory, Ed.
On the sniper?
Yeah. How come he always gets through the net? Every time. Could it be because he's, well, somebody with a reason for being on the scene?
Like who?
Well, a cop, say, or a reporter.
Interesting. What about the weapon? They let us through, okay, but they frisked us. And a cop would either have to dispose of the rifle, in which case it would probably be found, or carry it with him.
Yeah. So that theory's out.
It seems he fires the shot and then beats it immediately. By the time the first police car is on the scene, he's probably a half mile away.
Wait a minute, Ed.
Huh?
Across the road. There's somebody standing there.
Where?
He just went in one of those doors.
So what?
Ed, look, I know it's pretty dark, but I'm willing to swear that that guy dropped a gun barrel out of his coat and then picked it up again.
Oh, now come on, Mike.
No, I'm serious. You heard it drop yourself. You must have.
Sure, but I didn't take any notice.
Well, I did. As he stooped down and picked it up, I saw it glint. You know, the way metal will, even in the dark.
Now, look, Mike, you got this sniper business on your mind. We both have, but...
Imagination or not, I'm going to cross the street and take a look. You coming, Ed? I lost no time getting out of that apartment and onto the opposite sidewalk, and Ed came along with me, under protest. Maybe, like he said, I was going to make a fool of myself, but just maybe it was a gun barrel I'd seen clatter onto the pavement. This is the place, and here's where he dropped it.
Well, what do we do now?
Who lives in these houses?
Which door do you go in?
Well, I'm not sure. The doors of both these houses are alongside one another.
Well, the one on the left's empty. Guy who lived there moved out last month.
Oh?
I think the house has been sold, but there's nobody living there yet.
And the other one?
Oh, an old man named Giler. I think he's an invalid. Never seen him. He's got a daughter. Olga, I think her name is, and a son.
A son? How old?
Oh, 22, 23, I'd say.
Uh-huh.
But listen, Mike, he's a harmless-looking guy. Looks like he wouldn't say boo to a fly.
You remember what the psychiatrist said? The sniper could be anybody. Anybody at all.
But what do we do? Just knock on the door and say... Pardon me, but are you the sniper?
Look, do you know these people at all?
I've spoken to the girl. She's a plain Jane, not too friendly. Just good morning, that's about all. Mike.
Stretch your vocabulary to good evening.
But listen up.
Oh, why, hello there.
Herr Mills.
Yeah, it's me, Fräulein Geiler. This is my buddy, Mike Conroy. He's a newspaper man like myself.
Yeah, how do you do?
Will you come in?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks. Conroy, I'll kill you with this. Well, I guess you wonder what this is all about, our calling in, I mean.
Yeah,
well, you see...
I'd better explain, Fräulein Geiler. It's really my fault, you see. Herr Mills and I are both covering the sniper story.
Oh, the sniper, yes. I just heard on the radio he has killed again.
Yeah, an hour ago, to be exact. Ed and I were both there. When we came back, we were sitting up on a balcony, and I saw somebody come to your door. I couldn't see what he looked like. It was too dark, but he dropped something on the doorstep, and it looked and sounded like a rifle barrel. Then he picked it up, opened the door, and came inside.
Inside our house? The sniper? But it is impossible. We have no sniper in our house. There is nobody here but my father, my brother Jarro, and me.
Sure, that's what I told Mike.
Well, I don't want to scare you, Fräulein, but is your brother Jarro in?
Oh, yes, but... Oh, you don't think Jarro the sniper, but...
Well, do you think we could have a word with him?
Oh, certainly, Herr Conroy. It will make you happy. Although I don't know whether Jarro would be pleased to be disturbed in the middle of his bath.
Fräulein... Now I'll see what you've done. The whole family will probably sue us for defamation of character or something.
In the middle of his bath, she said.
Oh, you can sue for thousands over a thing like this. How well? The paper can afford it. Ah, Herr Geiler.
Oh, good evening, mein Herr. So you have come to catch the sniper.
Look, I guess we made a mistake.
Herr Geiler, I hope you'll pardon the question, but I just want to set my mind at rest. Yep. Did you come in just a few moments ago?
Nein, I have been lying in the warm bath for the past 20 minutes. Nor did I drop a rifle on the doorstep. I've been called many things in my time, but never a sniper. Perhaps it be considered a distinction.
Look, we're sorry to have bothered you.
You have nobody else living here, I suppose. A lodger, maybe?
Nobody. And if you wish now to switch the blame on to my father, bear in mind the fact that he has not worked since 5 years.
But I could swear I saw somebody.
If you disbelieve my story, you may ask my father. He will tell you that I have not stepped outside the door all evening.
Sure, I know, I know. You thought you saw somebody go in there, you'd swear it on a stack of Bibles.
And I would.
Look, have another drink and forget about it.
Maybe he went into the house next door.
We checked, remember? Cobwebs on the doorknob. Nobody's opened that door in weeks.
Then they must be covering up for him for some reason.
Oh, nuts. You spoke to the guy. He was laughing about it, fortunately. He's taken it into his mind to sue.
Yeah, that's what Dr. Atzvarn said. The sniper would joke with you and then go out and kill. He's the sort of guy that could have a grudge about his looks.
Geiler?
Well, he's no Adonis. How about that hooked nose of his?
Everyone in the Geiler family seems to have it. Even Olga. She's no beauty. But getting back to the kid, it still doesn't make him a killer.
Oh, what the heck. I'm going to bed. I tossed and turned all night. And the next morning, I was still puzzled. It just didn't add up. Late that afternoon, I went for a stroll. I walked past the Geiler's house and stopped for a moment where I'd seen the rifle barrel fall. A shiny little object against the wall caught my eye. I stooped down and picked it up. It was a cartridge, a .22 rifle cartridge.
.22 cartridge right on him.
Now, do you think I imagined it all last night?
But it still doesn't prove anything.
No?
Gerald Giler hadn't been out when the shooting took place. His sister said so, and his father.
So? People have lied before. Whole families of them.
I know, but why? If you knew your brother was a crazy killer, would you protect him? Wouldn't you say that he was put away if only for his own good?
Sure, I would.
But Mike...
Look, Ed, last night I saw somebody trying to conceal a gun. This afternoon I find a bullet. I'm going to phone the police.
Now, hold on. We made fools enough of ourselves last night. Let's not repeat the performance.
Well, then what do we do? Forget the whole thing and wait till the sniper kills again?
Look, the sniper in every instance is killed in the early evening between, say, 8 and 10, right?
Check.
If young Giler is the sniper, and tonight he gets the urge again, he'll leave by that door. There's no back exit. Behind the Giler's house are more houses.
Yeah? So?
So, tonight we sit out here and watch. Just to prove you're wrong, okay?
Ed still insisted that I was making a mistake, that there was nothing in the whole thing. But before we took up our positions on the balcony, I noticed he rooted out an old army service pistol from somewhere and stuck it in the top of his pants, just in case. Well, we sat, and we waited.
8:30. Life gets tedious, don't it?
It's almost completely dark, and no moon.
See. What if the sniper decides not to kill again for a month or two? Do we sit out here every night?
Shh.
Huh?
The door's opening.
Yeah, somebody's coming out.
Come on, Ed, and hurry. The shadowy figure set off down the street, and we followed at a safe distance. We were led through a maze of narrow, ill-lit streets and alleyways until, after we'd been walking about 20 minutes, the figure stopped at the rear of a large building which looked to be a warehouse of some kind. I grabbed Ed's arm. Hold on.
He's climbing the fire escape.
Making for the roof, I guess. What's on the other side of this building?
As far as I remember, a park.
Well lit?
In parts. A sort of lover's walk. Look, he's nearly reached the top.
Come on.
Better let me go first up the fire escape. I've got the gun.
Okay.
You can hear us coming.
Oh, we'll have to risk it. Take it easy now.
No sign of him.
Probably on the other side of the roof.
Look. Over near the skylight.
That's it.
Okay, Giler, your game's up. Drop that rifle and get your hands high.
Ouch!
Ed!
My shoulder!
Get down. Behind this chimney, quickly. You okay?
Yeah. Bullet only grazed my arm. Here, take the gun.
You haven't got a hope, Giler. The whole place is surrounded by police.
Well, two can play at that game. Keep your head down.
Drop that gun, Giler, or we'll shoot you.
Did you get him?
That's all bluff. I can't even get my head up far enough to see him.
His rifle's empty.
I'm coming to get you, Giler.
Get your hands up and drop that...
Oh, no, you don't.
Let me go. I'll kill you. Let me go.
Holy smoke.
Let me go.
Olga.
Yep, it all made sense then. The reason the police had never caught the sniper was that they'd been looking for a man. A woman, even a woman wearing slacks and a duffel coat, could get through their roadblocks without causing a second glance. After shooting her victim, Olga would dismantle the rifle and strap it beneath her coat. If she hadn't dropped the barrel that night, she might still be free. Why did she do it? Well, she was a plain girl with a big nose. She thought she was ignored and ridiculed. She thought that no man wanted her. So she took her revenge in her own crazy way by killing beautiful women. Olga didn't even stand trial. She was committed to an institution. I guess she'll be there for a long time to come.
have been listening to Lionel Merton as Mike Conoy in another exciting episode in the series, Europe Confidential.
This is Basil Rathbone again. Our half hour of mystery is almost over. Mike will be back again soon with another tale that makes the headlines behind the news. I too will be back to recall to you more of these stories which I hope you enjoy. Stories of mystery, suspense, intrigue, and crime. Well, goodbye now till we meet again to listen to another of the world's greatest mysteries.
That's it for this week, but we'll be back next week with some more great old-time radio, and I know you're going to want to hear it, so please join us then. Until then, Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.